Okay, we're going to call the meeting to order, the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee. It was very exciting. We had the bonding committee before us, and of course they didn't get out of the room on time, so we are starting a few minutes late for our first committee meeting. We appreciate you all being here, and I think that people are still kind of settling down from that. As usual, we are in our 4:30 time slot, which I know is really difficult for people. It's the end of your day. Yeah, you're hungry. You're thinking about going to the St. Paul reception tonight, and here you are in committee, and you will stay here until we are done. We'll try to get done on time, if not a little early. I understand Bonnie's coming back at 8 o'clock tonight still to finish up, so after the reception. So that should be an interesting meeting. And welcome back. I hope you all had a good interim. For me, it always reminds me of coming back sort of like to the first day of school. And it has sort of that feel. People ask you, what's it like coming back into committee or at the legislature? And I always say, yeah, it's like going back to school. The first thing, we're all wearing our best clothes and our new fancy clothes. We all have stories about the interim and about the summer and what happened. And then we're on our best behavior, at least for today, right? Yes. And so I think so far, so good. We have a reminder to turn off cell phones. You know, Sarah wrote that into my agenda, and this is the time where my kids are home, so I think the chair gets an exception, right? So if it starts buzzing, I'll turn mine off. Otherwise, I have to have mine on, just in case there's a text or two. The committee procedures are in your packets. Nothing's really changed since last year, but there's a reminder if you want to look over the procedures to look that over. In terms of what we're going to do this year, members, we're going to look at evaluation reports. Obviously, we're going to hear bills. We're going to talk a lot about QRIS in the next couple of hearings. We're going to be reviewing the governor's budget. We think that will be out maybe next week, later this week maybe, as well as the House budget. And we will have some national speakers that will be coming in. We have one that actually is here with us today. We have the national head of Head Start here. Her flight was delayed. She was actually not supposed to be here today, so it's a special treat to have her here with us, and she'll be talking with the Head Start update at the end of the meeting. Also, we wanted to go over a summary of the interim hearings. We had two really good hearings, one outstate. I think it's always good for us to get out of the Capitol and go into other districts, and that was in Representative Kulik Jackson's district. Do you want to share with us a little bit about the hearing in your district?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I was really pleased with the cross-section of folks who came to testify. We had everybody from the private Indian school, Nyashian Clinic, that has a preschool component, to the preschool in our K-12 system, to private daycare that also incorporates Head Start. But a couple things I think stood out in the testimony. One was the number of children on waiting lists waiting to be served. You know, in one case, I think maybe with Lakes and Pines, which does general Head Start coordination, they have for every child being served, there was a child on a waiting list. Mm. And you know, you only are three once, so it's not like you get another chance. And it was even worse at Nyashian. At their Head Start program, for every child being served, there were two on a waiting list. And so we certainly have a lot of underserved folks. The other thing that I think those who, of us who came, and I thank everybody for making the drive up, the frustration on the part of private daycares getting licensure, that it is their experience, and I saw there was another unrelated staff from another private daycare who were nodding in agreement, it was not user-friendly at all, and it was very, very difficult, and really, in a way that seems rather unjustifiable, to get licensure when there was such a great need. The particular daycare was there was a closure of one that went out of business, same facility, and families just desperate waiting for that to open because it's the largest. And you know, there was an 18-month delay, most of it I think unnecessary, and so we heard a lot about the frustration of getting the licensure, that we really need to make it user friendly.
Well, thank you. And I think for us as a committee to go up and hear about the concerns was really important. That was something you know, we hadn't heard about here at the Capitol, and we've been having meetings and talking about how to address that situation. Found that licensors are different county by county, and sort of like all other workplaces, have a variety of personalities and how they handle things, and really, shouldn't it be more consistent for our child care providers to be able to get licensure on an equal basis? Mm-hmm. So we appreciate you hosting. It's always interesting going out into a different area, and I think you had a couple of newspapers there. We don't see that at in our metro area, so it's...
It was quite the big deal.
Yes, it was. And so thank you for hosting us, and it was very interesting being there, so thanks.
Thank you.
Good. And then we have a report from Bloomington. We went down to Bloomington, and how many snowstorms have we had this year?
I don't know, but it was one of the worst and one of the coldest.
Yes. And you want to tell us about it?
Sure. First of all, I want to agree with Gail. It's really good to be in Malacca and listen to what your providers had to say, because the experience is extremely different than what my districts go through. And I want to thank everybody who came to Bloomington on that cold, stormy, blustery night. We'll forget the senators, but we'll thank you, Representative Downey, Peterson, Greiling, Bly, and Lincheski and Slocum, who are not on this committee, and you, Madam Chair, because if I didn't have to go out that night, I would not have. Anyway, I was really, really proud of my community, both of them. Edina sort of works off more of the traditional ECFE model, although it does have child care programs and other programs to go after the achievement gap. But Bloomington, for some reason, has got a program that is really remarkable. And it starts, they too have the traditional ECFE model, but they also have programs that start very early, and they have different criteria than I think we use. And I think we've talked about this a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have very specific criteria for math, for science, for children with special needs. And they also have a lot of wraparound projects, including health care, dental care, and a huge sliding ski. It's a ski. They have a ski lift in Bloomington, but a fee. And while there still is a waiting list, which I didn't really understand why, because it sounded like they were getting after it, the programs themselves were remarkable, and they were based from birth to grade four, and the emphasis was in conjunction with the school district, trying to get them ready to hit the ground running, as all good programs do. And I really want to thank Tom Holton, who really is a star in this area and makes Bloomington and Richfield a fantastic place to raise a family, particularly with young kids.
Right.
So thank you for bringing the committee out there. I think it was a really good meeting, and I certainly learned a lot more about my district, and thank you guys for coming as well.
Well, you're welcome. It was great to be out in Bloomington, even on such a cold night. And but I think you have one of the stellar early childhood programs by far in the state and in the metro. And I know there's one other thing that Bloomington's doing. They're using Title I monies to get early childhood to get kids ready. So, Representative Greiling, we hope we can somehow work with our K-12 schools to spend their Title I monies on early childhood, because that's the Bloomington principal that's doing that at his site talked to me the other day and said that what a difference that's made for early childhood.
Really tremendous.
Yeah, and since there isn't going to be any more money, we know in general for us, that would be one way to get some money over to early childhood, at least in the next year or two potentially. Mm-hmm. Good, well, thank you. And now we have a report, interim report from Representative Peterson on the Early Childhood Caucus.
Right, and I might add, just as a follow-up, I think it was Richfield that still had, 127 or 57 or 134 young children on the waiting list with that excellent program, waiting to get into their program. So I think that says something about the kinds of programs and the need that we still have, and those are within the community ed department. And so as a result, I decided to draft a little legislation around that issue, but that's a whole different issue. We'll go on to the caucus now. It's been a busy interim for the caucus. We've been dealing with a number of issues. Seems like unlimited meetings, number of meetings, but certainly the QRIS continues to be the main focus. How do we get a quality rating system in place? And more states are focusing on this, and we know that the federal government is also going to be giving some incentives for states to even progress further. And it seems like most of the states are either in the process or have implemented a quality rating system. Well, they all look a bit different. They all have different components. They all have different incentives. And one of the things that we did, as you remember, was to commission Louise Stoney, who worked with the Kellogg Foundation, and she did develop a framework for us, one that we could, it's just basically a computer framework, a model that we could use as we begin to move down this road toward implementing the pieces and policies around early childhood. We could begin to put in our own numbers, we could add strength to some of the areas that we felt were most important. And so that was one of the things that we've been looking at during the summer and giving presentations and to various groups, to the departments, to advocates, and to look at what's the most important piece to attack first. And we're kind of waiting to hear really from the departments right now and from the advocates. Then in addition to all of that work around the QRIS and the framework, we also have been hearing reports from the Mel Foundation and waiting for their final evaluation as to what are the most important things to make the system work. At least what they found out, they have an outside evaluator coming in. And then the second part of that was we've been having regional forums around the state. So that has been very interesting to go to places like Fergus Falls and Alexandria and Brainerd and Malacca and Rochester, Northfield, and listening to providers and listening to them talk about what would help them to be successful with the QRIS program. What are the pros? What are the cons of such a program? And I think it's really important. We need to know what's going out in going on in regional areas, and really some wonderful things are. In Greater Minnesota, we heard about some five-county collaborations that are really doing some great things. And we also found out about the kind of professional development that would be needed, the kind of technical assistance, what providers thought would be the right incentives. And, of course, that varied from place to place. But it was really good information that we ought to have. And Child Care Works, by the way, put this on. And so we were kind of the visitors, so to speak, to listen to the, as they put, had providers that talked about these issues. Our last one actually was in Minnetonka just the other night and was well attended. They had about 70, 80 people there and a variety, again, of opinions. And some people who say, I'm doing just fine. I'm doing really a good job and I don't need, you know, to have any more standards in place. But a lot of others who said, anything that I can do to make my program more productive for children and better for children and having children ready for school is important and I want to hear about it and I want the opportunity. And so we've been hearing a variety of opinions, and I think that during this year, as we start moving through the QRIS incentives, we will know a little bit more and have better information about really what's important. Our legislative agenda this time is with the QRIS grants, quality rating grants, and you'll be getting a piece of legislation around that, and it's redirecting some monies in the Department of Health and Human Services toward the grants, toward the quality grants, toward quality ratings at least, and building a quality system rather than as just putting it into a variety of programs. It will be focused, and you'll hear more about that in legislation that's going to be coming up. We're still going to continue to pursue the Office of Early Learning. It may or may not be in fruition this year, but it will be. We feel it's there in the future, and it needs to be an essential part of any future framework that we would have. We're also dealing with a report card and pre-K allowances. Those are all on our agenda to at least have legislation to talk about and to pursue this legislative agenda. I would like to also indicate that we have a new person on our our legislative caucus team, and that is Bud Nornes, and Bud is from the Fergus Falls area, and I know he's been very involved in that area in the early childhood activities, and we welcome him, and thank you for agreeing to help work with us on this important issue. So we have people from the House, Senate, and Republican and Democrat, and that is important. We have several early childhood caucus meetings. The first one, and you'll be getting information about when they are, but the next one that's coming up I think is really important, and that will be one with the funders. Now, you know, funding doesn't just come from inside the legislature, it also comes from outside. And we have independent business and nonprofits who are very interested in the issues in early childhood, who feel it's essential for an educated workforce, and who are willing to help us to put this into reality. And so one of our first meetings next Tuesday at lunchtime in 300 North will be funders coming to talk to us about their views, about what they're willing to do, and how they see this playing out in the next 10 years. So we hope that everybody who's available will be able to come to that lunch, and I think you'll find it very, very interesting. And you'll be getting a full agenda of when those meetings are, and we're looking forward to all of you being at the meetings and taking part in those discussions. And we will have questions and answers and discussion times during the meetings. And last but not least, having served on the Jobs Task Force, and I just thought I got this just today, and it's a brochure, The Economic Impact of the Child Care Industry in Minnesota. Now, granted, this was in 2003. It needs to be updated, and I think we need to be about the business of updating it, because when I looked at this, I was impressed and amazed at the kind of businesses this state has in the early childhood area, and the kind of money and resources and revenue that is involved in this whole industry. And so we need to, I think, to address this just a little bit more. I'll be talking more about this with the Job Skills Task Force, although I think that's disseminated. I'd probably dispersed by now. But I think the Small Business Caucus is still probably operating. And I think we need to be talking about the place of early childhood in all arenas, whether it's in business or taxes or commerce. It's an important part of our whole business cycle as well as our educational cycle in the state. So with that, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Probably more than 2 minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah, sorry. A little bit more, but it's good to have an update on what the caucus is doing. And I know they work bipartisan, bicameral, and so it's particularly challenging, but it's a way we can talk about issues on early childhood outside of the committee. And glad, I think, that both of the House co-chairs on the committee. As we know, the Senate doesn't have one. So we know we will probably bring just a little edge to the caucus co-chairs, which is a good thing. So glad to have you both here. Next, we are going to introduce our new page. If you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Minnesota from Los Angeles. Graduated from Augustana and Sioux Falls. I don't know what else you'd like to know.
That's good. Well, you know, we have this test in the Early Childhood Committee where you have to talk about where you lived when you were 3 years old, or this question, were you in LA then, or were you?
No, I was in Aberdeen, South Dakota.
Oh, okay. So interesting story. Good. Well, thank you. That's good. And I hope the members will get to know you. And if you need anything, make sure that you talk with Emily about that. So thank you. Next, we have the minutes. Representative Rosenthal, have you had a chance? There's four sets of minutes, members. April 14th, October 28th, January 7th, and January 19th.
I would like to move those minutes, Madam Chair.
So Representative Rosenthal moves the approval of the minutes for April 14th, October 28th, January 7th, and January 19th. Is there any discussion? Okay. Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion prevails, and the minutes for those dates are approved. And next, we're kind of doing catch-up members. We're going to talk a little bit about what's happening in the committee from a fiscal standpoint. We're going to have our fiscal analyst, Emily Adrians, talk a little bit about the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad to have another Emily around. Yes. Great name. Okay, I would just like to quickly reacquaint everyone with the spreadsheet. So it looks like this. I think you all have it in your packets. And the numbers in here are numbers that are the base numbers, and they're the base numbers that came from the November forecast. And everything will change, well, not everything, but some of the numbers should change slightly with the next forecast coming up. And then once the governor's budget comes out, I'll add columns onto that. So it looks kind of small right now, but it'll get a lot more complicated looking as we get further into the session. But just to remind you that, so under the program agency column, I start with the Department of Education, all the program areas that are in the committee. There we have the early childhood and family support, community ed and prevention, and then self-sufficiency and lifelong learning. And then the Department of Human Services programs that we have, where is underneath that, where we have MFIP, basic sliding feed, and child care development. And so the columns for the years, we have the actual numbers for fiscal year 2008 and then the 2009 closing numbers. And then the forecasted numbers for 2010, 2011, 2012, and 2013. The only things I'd like to point out for the programs that were affected by the aid payment shifts, you'll see that reflected. ECFE is a good one, a good example of that. That's on line 3. So if you look under the total for the biennium, the 2010 and 11 biennium, that total number is $41.5 million. And so that kind of reflects the reduction that happens in the first biennium, but then it's sort of paid back in the 2012 and 13 biennium, and that's why you have that big jump where it goes from $41 million up to $50 million. And then I think just one other thing I wanted to point out, on line 30, the basic sliding fee for the 2010 number for that, if you notice that it's $40.1 million as well, which is about $5 million lower than what is typical. And that, just to remind you, there was $5 million that was replaced with federal funds from the previous session. That was one thing we did. And I think those are kind of the biggest things that might jump out at people. If you have any other questions about this or just want to talk generally about the spreadsheet, I'd love to hear from you. I think that's about it.
Thank you. And members, do you have any questions? You know, as we're going to get the governor's supplemental budget shortly, I think we're going to become pretty familiar with the numbers, also with the budget deficit, and as we go through the target setting process and so forth. We want to say congratulations to you as our fiscal analyst, because you had an addition to your family. Well, during the interim, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
I'd love to. Yeah, actually, if I look a little groggy or anything, I did have a baby in August, a little boy named Jasper, and he's doing great. And he and his older brother are getting along famously, but he's not sleeping. And so you'll all know when he starts sleeping through the night. I'll have to make another announcement.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Good. Next, we are going to actually show a video. This is something new. We hope the technology is going to work here. We know the page is going to start that. This is their first test to see if we can get this going. This is Why Early Childhood Matters by James Heckman, who's a Nobel laureate from the University of Chicago. And some people, they send us different clips at different times asking us to show them, and we thought this one was particularly relevant for the committee and good to show on the first day. Let's see if we can...
Any country has tremendous human potential. It's a question of what it makes of it. There are many societies, including ours, many people don't get the chance to realize all their potential. I mean, right now we're in a period of great economic uncertainty. But the danger...
Is it the wrong one?
That's the wrong one.
Good. We'll see if we get the other one up here. Just now, a brief story. I've met James Heckman. I get invited to the Telluride Summit on Early Childhood every year, and he was there. I think he's been here in Minnesota before and testified as well. So if you get the chance, it's well worth interacting with him and talking about his ideas. Thank you.
return on investment in people, especially very young people, very, very high. Right now, a lot of economists don't have a clue of what's going on. I mean, a lot of economists, and probably me included. But when we start thinking about how to get fixes to get the economy started again, we have to be a little more careful than we've been in the past. We have a big emphasis now on potholes, on infrastructure, it's called. The new director of OMB, Peter Orszag, has actually written a definitive study of what the economic rate of return is to potholes. And he found that they're pretty low, actually. What I learned and became so important was that investing in people was as important as buildings or structures or roads, although those are important too. There are many projects out there, but few have the rate of return of early childhood investments, offering 10% annual rate of return. So for the same dollars, you can actually invest by training teachers and training children. But what comes out of it is a reduction in crime, the promotion of schooling, the fact that we're going to get a more skilled workforce in the future. There are very, very few government programs that have any return close to this. These rates of return calculations have not entered American political life to the extent they need to. This is not just speculation. This is not, I represent no lobby group. It's a piece of analytical work. Early childhood programs is one of the highest returns that we have on the docket right now available to make in American society. So it's foolish not to use it.
Thank you. So members, again, the reminder, when we think about all the things we're going to be doing this session, which is a lot of things, but investing in human potential and really getting kids off on the right start and preventing the achievement gap are all things we can do in this committee and take a stronger look at. So we also are going to have a video, I think, next time. Just we're trying to get a family daycare provider, and people probably know that this is pickup time for parents, so it is really hard to get the providers. So that's why we may have to use one for QRS as well. I would like to have, we're going to have an update from the Department of Human Services. If Deb Swenson-Klatt and Cherie Kotelnik can come up, they're going to talk a little bit about the stimulus funds and how they were used in the state, and then we will have an update from the Head Start Association. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Hope you had a good interim.
Okay. Delightful.
Yes. And if you'd like to introduce yourselves.
Cherie Kotelnik from the Department of Human Services, and I got to meet my newest grandson during the interim in July.
And what's his name?
Sayer.
Sayer. Oh, mm-hmm. Nice. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And you are?
I'm Deb Swenson-Klatt, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Department of Human Services, Child Development Services. Good.
And we've seen a little bit of you at the Governor's Advisory Council, because we've been working a lot with that, those meetings as well. Who would like to start?
I would. Okay. okay, so I'm here to give you a little bit of background on kind of what the ARRA funds were for the Child Care and Development Fund, and then some background on how they were used, and then to answer some specific questions about how they were used in the Child Care Assistance Program. So I will start with just a reminder of the ARRA funds. In the CCDF planning process, we did a lot of discussion about the ARRA funds and described them as one-time temporary funding. It was awarded in 2009. It flows through the CCDF discretionary grant funding stream, which requires obligation by September 30th, 2010, and expenditure by September 30th, 2011. There's no state match required to draw down these funds, so it was very nice for us to be able to spend these. The funds must be used to supplement, not supplant, state general revenue funds for child care assistance for low-income families. And there was $26.1 million available to Minnesota in CCDF ARRA funds. Of the $26.1 million, $3.4 million needed to be spent on quality child care initiatives. You all have a packet, and in your packet you have a chart that the top of it is ARRA appropriations from the Child Care and Development Fund. If you look at that chart, you will see the Child Care Assistance Program heading and the Child Care Quality Program heading, and then the first dark point under that is state appropriations. That's state appropriations of ARRA money. That is how you told us you wanted to spend the ARRA money in Minnesota. So for MFIP, transition your child care, you wanted us to spend invest $10 million in 2010 and $4.6 million in 2011 to offset the increased growth in that program. And you wanted us to invest $4 million each year in the basic sliding fee program. I didn't put the SRC investment here. You did allocate a little bit of money for the School Readiness Connection Administration. And then Deb will talk to you about the state appropriations and the CDS funds. The next thing that I want to remind you that you did with the ARRA funds in Minnesota was you passed a law requiring the funds to be spent by September 30th, 2010, and allowing the department to interchange the CCDF, regular CCDF funds, and the ARRA funds as necessary to make sure that the funds were fully liquidated by September 30th, 2010. So we did that. And if you look in the part titled Budgets under the Child Care Assistance Program, you'll see how that worked out in the Child Care Assistance Program. We will be spending $14.6 million of ARRA funds by the end of fiscal year 2010 in the Child Care Assistance Program. We pulled out $4.6 million of regular CCDF money in order to spend the ARRA first, and that will be spent in 2011. So are you following the chart? Because it's,
yes,
easier to follow in the CCAP program than it is to follow in CVS. So
I'm just hoping you're going to get to the numbers on how many kids were served.
I will.
Okay.
Okay. The next question I think you asked was how much we've expended thus far. I told you that we're intending to spend the whole amount by September 30th, 2010. So far in the MFIP child care program, we spent $7.3 million. And in the basic sliding fee program, we spent $4 million. That's two quarters worth of the funds available for those two programs, and the other two quarters are still to be reported. So those are as of December 31st. Then you had questions related to the basic sliding fee spending, and you wanted to know how many families have been removed from the waiting list. We did not specifically track how many families were funded by ARRA and removed from the waiting list. We do always track what our waiting list numbers are. And so I want to give you a little bit of background here. We put the $4 million of additional money that you appropriated for fiscal year 10 into the calendar year 10 allocation to counties. So the funds available for that year's allocation went up by $4 million. Then in June, we told the counties that they were having additional money in January, and we told them to start gearing up to spend that money. So the waiting list numbers between September of 09 and December of 09 kind of reflect the movement in the waiting list as a result of the ARRA funding. And the waiting list in September of 2009 was reduced from 6,915 families, and in December it was 6,212 families. So the total reduction was 703 families. And we believe that represents the county's efforts to gear up to serve additional families in calendar year 2010 on the basic sliding fee program.
Just a couple of quick questions. Did you give the money out on a percentage basis or somehow, did you take all the kids and wherever there were the most kids, they got the most part of the $4 million, or was it on a percentage basis? Was it on a?
That's a very good question. Actually, the legislature passed a revised allocation formula specifically for the ARRA funds, which was intended to send the money to the counties that had the waiting list numbers. So we bypassed the regular allocation formula with more emphasis on sending money to the counties that had unmet need.
And
there's a handout in your packet that shows which counties got how much money in the calendar year 10 allocation.
Okay, when you, so good. So you did do it
based on need and based on the waiting lists. And then if you take your number that about 703 more kids were served and you divide that by 4 million, I mean, is that a fair calculation, or how do you do the math on?
Actually, we had anticipated that the number of additional families that could be served with the $4 million was about 379 families. I think that the 700 number that you're seeing in reduction of the waiting list is kind of representative of the testimony you've had previously, where counties tell you that they send out the applications and a percentage of the families that return them are actually eligible or are working at the time that they get the application to fill out and even return them. So generally we talk about 50% return rate on applications from basic sliding fee, and I think this kind of represents that. But there is a county representative here if you want to talk in more detail about kind of how that works out in counties.
Well, I was just trying to figure out the cost per child. You take the total cost divided by the number of the wait. What's a fair way to figure that out? Take it by the number of the waiting list was reduced.
I don't have the numbers at my fingertips. I could find them during Deb's presentation, but okay. Generally we look at the forecast figures and look at our anticipated cost per month per child on the basic sliding fee program, and then divide that into the $4 million.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll get into that in Deb's part, but I would like to see those numbers and some of the math on how it all, you know, we're just trying to figure out the impact it made on the system. So sheer numbers, sheer dollars, but then what it really did. So we could also figure out what we need to move the system.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I will dig out those numbers while Deb is talking, and I'll give them to you later because I do have them in my packet.
Okay. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Kotelnik, how did it work using what some of us think might be the better system as far as doling out the money based on need rather than our current formula? And would you recommend any changes to that formula for the regular funding?
Ms. Kotelnik.
I believe that it moved the money more appropriately to the unmet need with this formula. The main formula that we generally have in place is intended to support stability in funds available when there aren't a lot of increases in funds, as well as distribution of the limited amount above that to the unmet need. The allocation process is a challenging one because we tell counties that when they put families on the program, they have to keep those families on the program until they're no longer eligible. So we pretty much need to assure counties that they have a stable amount of money to be shooting for in their budget in order to keep families on the program once they put them on the program. So I would say that on an ongoing basis, our regular formula probably is a better option. I don't think it's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Representative Greiling?
My other question, and I'm kind of shocked that, you know, all this money and still we only did a little tiny little nick in the huge waiting list that we have. How does that work then when the money, you know, goes out with the one-time money on one formula, and then you're trying to have the stability, but go back to the old formula for the counties that added people, but then they have to keep them on, and then we go back to the old formula.
Well, you thought very carefully about that when you passed your legislation with the allocation formula change, because we were worried about that. When we sent the bulletin out to counties with legislative changes out to counties, we told them to gear up for more money in 2010, and we told them to expect that there would be the $4 million investment in calendar year 11, too. So put them on and know that you can keep them for 2 years. And then in calendar year 12, the base funding is related, or no, calendar year 11, the base funding is related to the calendar year 10 initial allocation. And I think the way you said that was for the period January 1, 2011 to December 31st, 2011, each county's guaranteed floor must be equal to its original calendar year 10 allocation. So they got at least as much in 11 as they got in 10, according to that provision. Now, when the funds go down again in calendar year 12, We need to alert counties that they have to really, you know, not add families when other families go off the program or they won't have enough money.
You know, Madam Chair, I guess that sounds like a huge concern, because even though there's this, you know, one-time blip of a certain percentage that gets some help, then it seems like there'll be nobody getting on for a while. So then, did that do any good or not, you know?
Is it, Representative Greiland, I think that's something we're struggling with in all areas of the stimulus, you know, is where there's this cliff that is going to come crashing down on the legislature, and if the economy doesn't pick up, from child care to every area that's gotten the stimulus monies, all of a sudden they won't be there anymore. And I think with the child care, it is, thank you for the, you know, the question was interesting, because, and thank you for it, is, they have to be careful if they've got to sort of stop, and then just as people fall off, go off the program. So I suppose you don't get any new people for quite a while. But yeah, we ideally have some more, the economy picks up and we have some more revenue and we can continue some of those kids being served.
Madam Chair, thank you. Or we come up with some money.
Yes, exactly. Representative Kulik Jackson.
I've got two questions. One is, just to clarify, was it 700 and some children or families additional that were served?
Ms. Katulik?
It's families on the waiting list, so it's actually more than 700 children that were served.
Representative Kulik Jackson.
So by... Actually, I was going to say my calculations, but actually Representative Rosenthal did the calculations. It's about 55. At first, I thought that sounds like a lot of money for 700 families, but it's $5,500 per family. And when you think about a family, I mean, I remember what it cost when I had an infant in child care at $200 a week, and that's $800 a month, and it really is, it adds up. The next question is, do you know what percentage of that $4 million actually went directly to child care versus maybe administrative costs? I mean, what did the state keep some for administrative costs? Did the county keep some for administrative costs because they needed more personnel? Do you know what percentage actually went to delivery?
Actually, I do. The amount that counties can claim for administrative costs is 5% of the direct services allocation, and the state did not keep any of the money for that, because we've just added it into a system that currently exists. And in answer to your question, I appreciate the fact that you pointed out that it was families coming from the waiting list. Generally, in our programs, when the families get on the program, we're generally serving about 1.85 children per family. Not all 700 families got on the program. I'm thinking less got on the program, but that's how many came off the waiting list.
Thank you. Are you finished? I think we can, what I'd like to do is talk with you more about the numbers and maybe getting back to us in writing with, you know, some of these, and so that the members have a clear picture of how the money was spent, and also the pending situation and what that's going to cause as well. Are you done with your testimony?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, thank you. And welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I will turn now to the Child Care Quality Funds supported by the ERA investment in Minnesota. As Cherie mentioned, Minnesota received $3.4 million in ERA funding, and in 2009, the legislature directed that these funds support three specific initiatives to improve child care quality in fiscal years 10 and 11, and you allocated specific amounts of funding for each of those three initiatives for each fiscal year. If you look at the lower half of the handout that Cherie was speaking from and focus on the child care quality programs, I'll describe the section that's titled State Appropriations, which describes this funding for those three initiatives over the two fiscal years. And you'll note the amounts directed to each of those initiatives. Those initiatives include the Family Friend and Neighbor Grant Program, the Parent Aware Quality Rating System Pilot, and then an initiative to support training, coaching, consultation, grants, and other supports to prepare child care providers for a voluntary statewide rating system. Give you an update on each of those three initiatives, and you'll find some other handouts in your packet. The next one gives you some detail on each of those three, and I'll talk a little bit about that, and then I'll go back to the bottom of the this first handout to talk about how the funding was budgeted in fiscal years 10 and 11. So beginning with the FFN grants program, this appropriation of $750,000 for the biennium extends the Family, Friend, and Neighbor grant program, which began in fiscal years 2008 and 2009 with state general funding. It extended it for another 2 years. The grant program was established to promote early literacy, healthy development, and school readiness for children in FFN care settings. And the grants are made available to community-based organizations, nonprofits, and Indian tribes working with FFN caregivers. In fiscal years 08 and 09, DHS awarded 6 grants through a competitive process. And those grants actually began in January of 09. And because they had only been in place 18 months at the point that the state general funding ended, and because each of those 6 grantees have been demonstrating promising progress in their grant activities, DHS felt that the best approach for the use of the ERA funds for this initiative would be to extend those same 6 grantees for another 2 years. The grantees are described in yet another handout that follows called FFN Grants Program Activities. And you'll see that they include the Early Childhood Resource and Training Center in South Minneapolis, Thorson Memorial Library and West Central Area Schools in Grant County, Neighborhood House in St. Paul, White Earth Indian Reservation, Northland Foundation in Northeast Minnesota, and Resources for Child Caring, serving Minneapolis and Northwest Hennepin County with this particular grant. In collaboration with many community partners in each of those grant programs, each grantee offers a unique combination of activities and resources for both caregivers and the children in those FFN care settings. And just some examples include Grant County's Thorson Library program that provides a very inviting environment for FFN caregivers to check out ready-to-learn backpacks and participate in play and learn groups and access other resources through that library. The White Earth Indian Reservation is another grantee. It uses language and literacy tools to track progress of children in FFN care settings through home visits with FFN caregivers. In Hennepin County, the partners offer a practice preschool program for Hmong, African American, and Latino children in FFN care settings that are linked with ECFE and public school pre-K programs. They also have a community ambassadors component to their grant that recruits these ambassadors in those cultural communities to reach out to FFN caregivers. An evaluation of the first 2 years of this grant program is due to you next week on the 15th and was conducted by the University of Minnesota Center for Early Ed and Development. There'll be rich information coming to the legislature and to all of us about the this grant program next week. A second initiative funded by the ERA Funding for Child Care Quality supports the continuation of the Parent Aware pilot in Minnesota, and the legislature directed that $1.4 million support this initiative. As you probably know, this was launched by the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation in 2008 in partnership with DHS, MDE, the Minnesota CCRNR network, and the University of Minnesota, with the goal of improving the quality of early childhood settings through a rating system and improving children's school readiness as a result. The MELF funding for this pilot ends this fiscal year, June 30th, but this new ERA funding extends the initiative for another 12 months. We are not planning any major changes in the structure of the pilot or its focus during this 12-month extension. It will continue to operate in the same pilot areas using the same quality indicators as developed in collaboration with MELF and the Department of Education and DHS. Parent Aware will also It will continue to operate as well in the Minneapolis expansion area, which wasn't funded originally with MELF funds, but that expansion area was made possible late last year by the funding from United Way and Alina Foundations. As of December 31st, there are 316 programs rated through the Parent Aware pilot. 80 of these have gone through the full rating process, which means that they collected a large amount of information themselves as providers or programs, and then were observed by the University of Minnesota staff, and then their that information was submitted and our full rating was calculated. The remaining programs received an automatic 4-star rating because of being either accredited or being a Head Start program or a public school pre-K program. And you'll see a chart also in your packet with more detailed information on the number of rated programs. That information or and also much other information on the pilot will be presented to you, I believe, on Thursday with as a part of the Parent Aware interim evaluation. This year and next, we anticipate that similar numbers of programs will continue to participate in the rating system. More of the ratings will likely be re-ratings of programs that have gone through the process at least once and are rated every 12 months. Fewer will be new ratings, as we believe we've attracted many of the early adopters into the program in the pilot areas. But having said that, we are still continuing to successfully recruit new programs into each cohort, with family child care providers signing up at a higher rate than centers. A part of the reason for that, we think, is some successful outreach to family child care providers, including a video that the CCR and our network has created that helps address some of the concerns that family child care providers have expressed about rating systems in general and Parent Aware in particular. And so far, that feedback about that video has been positive. The final initiative funded by ERA funding is the training, coaching, consultation, and grants initiative to prepare for a statewide voluntary rating system. This third appropriation totaled $1.3 million for the biennium, and we've taken a two-pronged approach to implementing this. First, in this current fiscal year, we have focused on developing resources and expanding our capacity to deliver these resources statewide. While we recognize that many communities have some access to excellent quality improvement resources, those resources are also limited and not necessarily strategically tied to aspects of quality targeted by a quality rating system. And also to stretch our funding, we have utilized our existing CCRNR and professional development system infrastructure already funded with state and regular or non-ERA CCDF funds. So then a second prong to implementation of this initiative will begin July of 2010 when we roll out these resources to providers around the state. And in order to provide some visibility for the initiative, we have branded it. We have called it Building Quality, Making Good Things Better. And the final materials in your packet are a CCRNR brochure. The shorter brochure is an existing brochure that the CCRNR system has used for some time to promote their professional development resources. But in the back pocket, you'll see a one-page flyer that highlights the building quality resources for providers around the state. And this is just getting ready to go to print. So it highlights four resources with this ERA funding, but also using, again, our existing state and federal funding that include a building quality checklist for providers that allows them to assess their quality on their own, and it assesses, they are asked to assess their quality in four areas of family partnerships, teaching materials and strategies, tracking learning, child safety, and teacher and caregiver training and education. So that's one part of the Building Quality Initiative. A second is Building Quality Grants. There will be a limited number of grants available to providers who've completed the checklist and identified specific needs that will help them improve their program's quality in the focus areas I just mentioned. A third resource is the Environmental Rating Scale Coaching. The ERS scale is a observation tool currently used in Parent Aware and many other rating systems around the country. Our CCR in our system now has trained staff in all of their regional offices that can provide coaching to child care providers on how to do well in this observational tool. So again, for a limited number of providers, we'll be making that available through the Building Quality Initiative. And then finally, the Minnesota Child Care Credential, set of training or a package of training aligned with quality rating system indicators of quality is rolling out. This will provide sequenced, standardized training for providers around the state to equip them with the knowledge and skills they need to provide quality care and education for young children. We'll be making a special, that credential will be available for all providers, but we'll be making a special effort to provide it at very low cost to providers with, to some providers with ERA funding. And for these resources that are available on a more limited basis, the grants, the coaching, and the low-cost training will be targeting providers who are serving higher numbers of at-risk children. So finally, just turning back to that first handout about the funding levels, if you look at the bottom of the page under budgets, you'll see how the ERA funding accelerated into fiscal year 2010 will work. Under fiscal year, under the column fiscal year 2010 ERA funding, you'll see that that funding for those three initiatives totals $1.2 million. And then you'll see that we've accelerated the use of the remaining ERA funding, the $2.2 million, and using it to pay for other CCDF budgeted activities for child care quality. And these activities were already budgeted for in fiscal year 10. They would have been paid for with regular CCDF funds if not for the acceleration. Then if you look in the fiscal year 11 CCDF column, you'll see that we'll be using non-ERA CCDF funds that would have been spent in 2010 to support those three legislatively directed activities in fiscal year 11. And you also asked just for an update on the total drawdown of our ERA funding. As of the end of the second quarter, December 31st, we have drawn down for the child care quality portion of the ERA funds $826,785.11. So with that, I'll close and welcome questions.
Thank you. Members, we are going to spend the next two hearings on QRES. So I think what I'd like to do, we still have Head Start to go today if there's any quick questions, but we're probably going to know more about QRES and after the next two hearings. I think, are you going to be around, Ms. Swenson-Clapp, for those hearings?
Yes, or other department staff will as well.
Okay, because I think, I don't know about all of you, but there are a lot of questions as we look at numbers and think of things, but I think we need to process these and go through these hearings, and for all of us trying to put together the money being spent on this initiative, where the evaluations are at, kind of where MELF is at, and where the future is at. We're trying to assess all of that, and by next week we're going to have a better picture of that.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any quick questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, we'll have the Head Start folks make their way down and hear a little bit about Head Start. Members, we might remember that MELF came last year and told us, as you know, they are also sunsetting. So their Parent Aware pilot and the money that they put into it is sunsetting in about, I think it's about a year and a half. So we need to work
together with all of the things that are happening QRIS and decide on the future direction, which I think right now we're not exactly sure where it's going to go. Well, welcome to the committee. We have several people with us, and we have the National Director of Head Start, which we're pleased to have you here. She is snowed in. I wasn't supposed to be here, but came for a presentation on Monday, I think, and today is Tuesday, and can't get out tomorrow even, right?
Nope.
You could tell us about your travel plans, but we want to welcome you here, and if you want to, is Yasmina going to start, or if you'd like to introduce yourself and start with your testimony?
Madam Chair and distinguished members of the committee, my name is Yasmina Vinci, and I'm the Executive Director of the National Head Start Association. And I thank you very much for the opportunity to come and address you all. There's no other place I would rather be stranded in than Minnesota. I'm serious. I do. Minnesota is, you know, they say home is where the heart is. Well, I think of Minnesota as my professional home. My in my previous role as the Executive Director of the National Association of Child Care Resource and Referral, that organization had started in Rochester, Minnesota. It was the brainchild of the late Tudy Sherlock, so I have all these ties. I'm very proud also to say that Minnesota always leads the way among the Head Start State Associations. Gail Kelly, who will be testifying next, is one of the leaders really modeling very good partnering, amazing ability to connect Head Start with the rest of the early childhood initiatives. So Gail is a model for the other Head Start associations. I also would like to commend all of you for your commitment to being here this late. I keep thinking, boy, wouldn't it be great if in congressional hearings we had as many people attending and at this late hour. The National Head Start Association represents 1 million Head Start and Early Head Start children and their families, about 220,000 staff and the programs who work with them. And I would just like to first share with you what keeps me awake at night, and that is the 1.1 million children, additional children under the age of six, nationally, who have come into poverty in the last decade. And this is before the recession. So that means that the numbers we have is that only about 40-some percent of all eligible children were served by Head Start. Early Head Start just serves a very minuscule 5% of the eligible children. So that means that the number, that the need for Head Start has really grown faster than nationally or at state levels are we able to meet it, to meet the demand. We have the good news is the ARA, which you've heard in connection with the child care and the child care and development block grant, which is the stimulus fund. As you know, the $2.1 billion was available for Head Start and early Head Start. Nationally, we count that created the expansion of 14,000 new Head Start slots and 50,000 early Head Start. And you will hear from Gail later how those numbers translated for Minnesota. And also that was the opportunity to have some quality improvement money and program improvement. And I just want to remind you that Head Start programs have to meet 1,700 standards. So the quality, you do need money to support meeting all the standards so that the children can be the children can receive and avail themselves of a whole suite of services that help their getting ready for school and for life. The President's 2011 budget, despite the incredibly harsh budgetary situation nationally, despite the freeze for much of discretionary funding, despite some of the really hard choices that have had to be made, it sort of heeds James Heckman's words and does invest in that it maintains the investment in those additional slots that I mentioned. It proposes to maintain that and also some of the cost of living and quality improvement. I'd just like to thank Minnesota for its part in supporting being part of the national commitment to give an opportunity to all children, including the most vulnerable children, to succeed in life and in school. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we like hearing that we have better attendance in Congress. And I'm amazed you're all here, too. But we're glad people are hanging in there. Sometimes at this time of day, it can be very hard with childcare and other things. We know you have one other connection to Minnesota, which is you went to graduate school with our speaker, right?
That's correct.
Yes.
That's
so right. Connection with Margaret, and I know that the speaker sees Yasmina as a great resource on early childhood. So we're glad to know that, too. And good.
And my first, the way that I introduced myself to her when we were colleagues at graduate school was to say, Minnesota used to be so wonderful about children and families, and kind of think, okay, if she was a member of the legislature, isn't there something that I could sort of, urge her to do. So that's how the friendship started.
That's good, and she's been trying ever since, so thanks. And that was Harvard, of course. Good. Well, welcome to the committee. Who would like to go next?
I guess I've been on the docket here. Hi, Gail Kelly, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gail Kelly, the Executive Director for the Minnesota Head Start Association. We have a written statement handout in your packet, so I won't go into much detail so that Craig can provide his testimony. But I do want to highlight a few things for your attention in regards to the ARRA funding that did come to Minnesota. Minnesota was earmarked for around $12 million of those funds out of the $2.1 billion. And I'm going to jump to the last line of my testimony to say that actually because of competitive grant writing and the perseverance of all the Minnesota grantees who wanted that money really, really bad, we actually came away with more than $15 million. And that does not at this point include what came to our tribal programs because those numbers aren't out yet. So we more than got our share of the allocation that was earmarked for us. And again, I want to be sure that you understand these monies are one-time money that was entirely for quality improvement and expansion. So those programs that were unfortunate enough to not get the competitive expansion money are feeling the pinch every bit as much as they've always felt. And it is one of those sad realities. There are four pots of money or allocations. The first came out this summer. It was cost of living and quality improvement. And programs had a list of ways that they can use this money. I think the majority of them were really investing in enhancements to duration intensity of services, adding back staff that they'd had to lay off so their ratios could be a little bit easier and improve more class interaction with children. Supporting staff development, and also, obviously, with quality COLA wages and working toward trying to improve the salaries of our teachers. The second pot of money was a national competition, so this is partly why we got more funds, and that was program improvement funds. These went to purchasing buses, and let me tell you, there were a lot of buses that were starting to rot underneath that we desperately needed. So bus allocations, kitchen equipment, facilities maintenance, playgrounds, and we came away with about $2.5 million for those kind of improvements. And if you ever go down to the McKnight Center in Hennepin County, it finally got a new roof. And they had strategically placed pails for a number of years, so that was sorely needed. So we appreciate those program improvement dollars. The next allocation was Head Start expansion, and we really had only a small allocation for this. It was only 1.18 million or 1.2. It serves about 142 additional children. And because it was such a small allocation, only three Minnesota grantees received that. So you'll see some Head Start expansion in Hennepin County, in Olmsted and Freeborn County, and in Mojave that serves up in Becker, Hubbard, the Hubbard area. So again, that was a very, very small part of the pie. The more large allocation came in early Head Start expansion. And we did see, although we were, again, here supposed to only get about $5.8 million, we actually got $6.7 million in early Head Start expansion. And a list of the grantees, the number of children that they'll be serving, and allocations are in the handout that I provided. We're looking at about 560 additional slots for early Head Start, which will go to the most high-risk pregnant women and infants and toddlers in those communities. And I think the exciting thing, and I hope you'll take a hard look at the picture that I provided, because the exciting thing about early Head Start is jobs. We had 75 new hires together for training just last week. They are young, excited, bright, shiny professionals. They're really just a diverse, exciting group to work with. They're so excited about their work. They're going to be doing home visiting and intensive infant toddler training and work with families. And it's largely women, and I think in the ARRA funding, we don't see a lot of new jobs for women. It's a lot of infrastructure, so this is very exciting. And we anticipate the job production at about 163 new jobs. It's almost 1 to 4, 1 to 5 for every child that we serve. That the ratios are very small with early Head Start, so about a new job for every 5 children. Just want to thank you for your interest and encourage you to visit sites where early Head Start is expanding. We really want to get you out to those communities so you can see those opportunities. And I'll direct the rest of this time to Craig Gratke, who is now a long time early Head Start manager here in Minnesota.
Thank you. I would say usually we put our person that's traveled the farthest from away on a lot earlier. So we would save the best for last, because Tri-County, I know, is, where is Tri-County? It's
Morrison, Todd, and Crow Wing counties.
So you've come a long way to be with us. So we appreciate it. Arguably, Yasmin's come a little farther, but she was snowed in, so she doesn't count. So we appreciate you going last here. And we're hoping, members, if you have any questions, we hope to end shortly after 6, because we started a little late, remember, because of the bonding committee. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Craig Gratke. I work for Tri-County Community Action, Central Minnesota. John Ward is up in our area, Brainerd and Little Falls and Long Prairie. We have an early Head Start program. We've been operating since 1998. Had about 130 spaces, and we added 64 new spaces under ARRA funding. With that being said, that means for us, because we're doing a lot of different options, and I'll explain that a little bit, 19 new jobs, 19 full-time jobs with benefits, which is sorely needed in our area. We have a lot of unemployment. A lot of our industry has gone away. So just to kind of talk about that, five of the jobs are home visiting jobs, and home visiting for us really is a year-round job. For early Head Start, we do hour and a half home visits once a week, 46 weeks out of the year. We're going to be adding center-based, which is a new initiative for us, and I think for a lot of early Head Start programs around Minnesota, we've done home-based for a long time. There's not been a lot of center-based early Head Start. But coming out of our home-based programs and our staff working in those programs, we've come to understand a number of things. The majority of our parents are pregnant, or the parents that are pregnant, are parenting, and they're teenagers. Most of them, 85% of them, come to us with postpartum depression. And we're even seeing that way before delivery. There's a lot of depression that we're picking up in moms in this age group. before delivery. It's about 70% of our moms have drug use of some type. 50% of them, or a little over 50% of them, are victims of sexual assault. We have, even in the teen population, about 50% of them are homeless. Meeting the McKinney-Vento, they're shifting around. They're with grandma, mom, the boyfriend's mom, the boyfriend. They're all over the place. And a lot of them don't have a lot of resources because of their age. If you're under 18, you lack a lot of resources to housing and medical assistance and a lot of those things. So that kind of paints a picture of our families and moves us to a center-based kind of programming, which is going to be a very, very intensive model. Our ratios are going to be one teacher staff for every four kids. We're going to have centers with eight kids. They're going to be our partner program, Greater Minnesota Family Services Collaborative. They provide mental health services. They're providing new staff. They hire two new staff as well. They're going to be providing a staff in each of our two sites to do mental health services. They do pull-out, and they also do in-home services. There's also going to be a home-based component coming out of Head Start, or early Head Start, on top of that as well. What we're seeing in our families with our children coming out of these homes, there's a lot of attachment and bonding issues. And we're also seeing a real kind of intensity of alertness with children. Their experience has not been very well, and they have a heightened sense of awareness of their environment because there's a lot of people yelling. There's a lot of negative stuff going on in these environments. Our intent is to take these children out for 8 to 10 hours a day, 5 days a week, while these moms are attending high school, our area learning centers, going to school. We have some moms that are working part-time and going to school. And provide a setting for these children to learn how to be cared for and to be nurtured and to attach to somebody. Research indicates that children don't need to necessarily attach to their parents to have the best of the best start. If they can learn to attach and learn to bond with somebody, that carries through later on. Where investment isn't right now, our investment is 15 years from now, and having these children be in high school, not pregnant, not addicted to drugs, and not incarcerated. We have, with that, talk about our partnering kinds of things. We have integrated mental health services. We're partnered with Child Protection. We get referrals from our local Child Protection units and social services to serve families. Law enforcement, of course, is involved in some of these families because of the drugs and probation officers, the drug testing. We have partnerships with high schools, which has been real good for us and real good for our families. The moms and dads get credit for time they spend in our doing home visits or in socializations or participating in our sites. So that's been real good for us. Part of this, too, this new approach for us in center-based with Greater Minnesota is going to be the starting of a teen mom group, kind of supporting them. We're doing some fatherhood support thing. We have a mental health consultant who is going to be working with me and one of our family service staff who's a male, and we're going to be working with young dads and trying to talk about some responsibility. Being involved and supporting. So with that, I think that is about all I have to say unless you have questions.
Well, first I want to thank you. I think you're doing very good work, and it's here at the legislature we don't often or always get a slice of reality, and I think that was one of them, is that I remember visiting a Head Start, I think, in Bemidji, where it was home visiting, and then they had come in for a program. But, in Minnesota, where it's freezing, it's snowy, they may not live in a neighborhood, people are isolated with their kids. I mean, they need all the things you talked about as far as parenting and help with all the issues that are going on out there. So we appreciate the good work you're doing. I have to say I'm a little stunned at the job numbers. I think you're talking to a group that really wants to hear those and members to hear it from Head Start. And people want to criticize, it's my editorial side comment, the stimulus funds for not creating jobs. And what we're hearing right here is that they are, and they're creating, many, many new hires. I think we would definitely like some more information on the number of jobs, because that's something here at the legislature we're interested in, of course. We worry about the drop-off, kind of what Representative Greiling talked about. Will these jobs stay there? If the president has included these slots in his base and that passes, yes. If not, will those jobs go away? So I think that's something we're really interested in and how that's going to continue. Members, any questions for our testifier, Representative Mariani?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Gracke, thank you for your testimony in particular. It's sobering, and I think really helps us center ourselves in reality. My question has to do with the use of the quality improvement expansion era funds. So you've described a pretty challenging reality that the program is interfacing with. My guess is that those dynamics didn't evolve overnight, and so those characteristics have probably been out there for a while. It is part of your testimony here. Telling us that the ERA expansion funds made it possible for you to look at a redesign, if you will, in terms of how you're providing those services and matching them up to these harsh realities. It sounds like that's probably true, and I guess I suppose the tough question is what happens post ERA funds relative to the delivery of those kind of services and interaction with these young families into the future.
Mr. Gracke.
Yeah, we have had a lot of discussion back at home with our policy council, which is a group of parents that shares governance with our governing board. And in truth, if we would lose the ARRA funding, I think what that would mean for us would be probably a reduction in home-based services and a continuance of center-based services, because we've known that we've needed to do this, that we've needed to make this leap. In dollars and cents, I can't tell you what that is, but it would be a loss of a number of spaces, probably 10 spaces in two different settings, 20 spaces overall. Off of the 130 that we currently, that is part of our permanent kind of funding to maintain that kind of service. But I think it's valuable to recognize that these are the most vulnerable children and very, very vulnerable families. And we need to do the best that we can do to move them forward and kind of set that example locally.
Any other questions? I think that, members, sometime we should look at even more carefully the relation in this committee. I mean, teenage pregnancy, you all know I teach early childhood public policy. We do a whole week on teenage pregnancy and the relations to how that creates kids. Can be generational poverty, generational drug use, generational violence, all of those things. And something we really need policies to support teens and teen moms and dads to help them be healthy and their kids be healthy. And so thank you again for your good work. With that, members, we will adjourn. We're going to do QRS on Thursday. Thank you for staying, and see you Thursday, and thank you for testifying. That we're adjourned.